Let's get the show on the road. Make sure we're live. We're not live yet. We're a little early, a few seconds. It's 5 o'clock now. So we should be up there at some point. And if not, then we got a problem. Right? It says I'm live. All right. We just got to make sure it goes up there in the live section. And I don't see it yet. All right. I'll try another browser. I don't know what the hell this is all about. Let's see if we're up here on this one. It's like technology. It's a mystery. There we are. Okay, we're up there. Beautiful. Now let's see if we're on this browser. Yeah, that's weird. Oh, yeah, there we are. Okay, good. So we're good. We're good on both of them. All right. Let's see. We're good. Oh, boy. Look at that. Ouch. Ouch, ouch, ouch. That hurts. Okay. It's a beautiful day here. I don't even know what temperature is, but oh, damn, it's close to 80 here in the Florida Panhandle. And we're just waiting for Dukester. And he should be here soon. And we'll get him in, and then we'll do the intro. I guess that time change is still affecting people. When was that? The 8th? It's still having an impact, I think. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, sirree. Oh. Wow, a lot of good stuff in the news, huh? Yep. Yep. A lot of good stuff in the news. Hold on 1 second. All right, that was Dave. He was having some trouble connecting. He might have been using an old link. So we're going to find out. If he can come in now, then he was using an old link. And he says it's just spinning and spinning. Yeah, that's what it was. All right, that's what it was. You were using the old link.
Well, that's because you had the other one. The other one didn't even have the big logo like you had before.
Oh, it's my fault now, is it?
It's all your fault. Look, well, I got a little video out of play. You can pull it up yourself. It might be better for you to do that rather than me playing on. That's right. It's better for you to do that. Just go to Jimmy Dore. Let me give you the exact name.
Is it YouTube?
It's YouTube. You yeah. Worked it before. Last time we did it. All right. Let's see if we can get it up here in just a second. It's good. It's really good.
Jimmy Dore is like light years behind us.
He is light years behind, but in some way. And this one is kind of cool because it explores Talmudic stuff. And it's pretty interesting.
Does he say the word Jew?
Yeah, this talks about Jew. This just, you'll see. It's worth it. Trust me.
Better be, damn it.
Damn it.
All right. Well, you're looking for that. I'll do the
intro. I got it up. Here it is.
Because I was waiting for it.
Candace drops Charlie, Kirk texts humiliating, you know, the Jews. Anyway, it's that's the name of it. You can
Charlie Kirk.
Candace drops Charlie Kirk.
I'll just try that. Okay. Really, yeah, I got it. I got it.
That's really good.
I got it. All right. I'll do the intro, and then we'll play that. You want to play the whole thing?
Well, you want to just introduce me first real quick? We don't have to do too long of an introduction.
Well, it's 12 minutes.
It's only 12 minutes.
If you want to play the whole thing, we'll play the whole thing.
Oh, yeah, let's do it. But we can even pause it if you listen to what I'm saying, and we might cause it to get a comment, okay, because I can always comment shortly on some of these things.
Okay. I'm gonna intro us. All right.
Let's just say it's worth it.
Dave, recommended whatever you want, by Duke. Buddy. Whatever you want. By Duke.
Okay.
You're David Duke.
Last time I checked.
Yep. All right. This is a Dave and Duke call-in show on FTJmedia.com. And it's a call-in show. You can call in. I'm gonna give you the PIN number. And you can ask David anything you would like. Within reason, and he'll answer it because he's the answer man. And as always, the ongoing challenge. If anybody could let us know of a more or a greater existential threat to humanity and free speech, which thankfully the world is finally waking up to, other than organized international Jewry, not Zionism, Jewry, let us know and we'll
quit
the show. We'll quit the show right away. We'll quit now because we got stuff to do. And the second part of that is not there anymore. All right, here's the PIN number. And by the way, the call-in button, if you don't know or if you're new here, it's at the top of ftjmedia.com. And all you do is just simply go to the top, click call in, it'll open up a new window. You could save the PDF because the numbers don't change. Only the PIN number changes. And there it is, 7831-9152-54. 7831-9152-54. Memorize that. There's going to be a quiz later. And you can call in, but don't call in during our intro and the video and all that. Call in after. We'll let you know when we can take the calls. And you can also leave your questions or comments in the chat, as most of you are aware. And I don't know, you might want to get out, Stephen, and, you know, come back in or restart your computer. A lot of people use old gear, I've found out over this time. And the old gear, because FTJ is modern, the old gear sometimes doesn't work well with it. So that's why you might be frozen, or, you know, it's either your computer or your connection. But I think everything's good here, and we're going to play this video. All right. So let's go. And I've never watched a video, maybe a snippet of this guy, but let's watch it.
Well, you missed something.
I don't need to watch people who are eons behind us, Dave. But I'll watch it for you.
Well, thank you.
Yes. And here it is. It is this guy Jimmy Dore who finally woke up to the Jew.
That's not Jimmy. That's his Jewish sidekick. And look where
is
he's
this
at.
Jimmy Dore right here?
No, that's his sidekick.
Oh shit! See, I didn't even know.
He's coming up though. Right?
Who's this guy?
His sidekick is, I don't know, some Jewish guy, but he's very anti-Jewish in a way. You'll see. He makes fun of him. But he's, by the way, with the picture in the background, I recognize it because even though you don't see much of it, that's the St. Louis Basilica Cathedral in New Orleans. See, that's my backyard, so to speak, when I grew up in Louisiana. That basilica, for some reason, he's got that as a drop, you know, back behind his video on the show. It's pretty
very interesting. Beautiful.
Sometimes, yeah.
It's beautiful, but it's also racist.
Absolutely. It was built by white people.
Just that's like, why it's racist.
Just like Christianity was adapted by Europeans primarily, not Jews. Jews fought it. There's some Jews that joined, but overwhelmingly Jews hated Christ. And that's an interesting point of view right there, because when you realize that there's no personality, there's no individual, there's no entity, there's no human being or God that they have any more opposition to, Jewishness does. And when I say Jewishness, I mean Judaism. Because Judaism is about Jews. It's taken from the word Judaism. We're talking about Judah, which is basically the word that was adapted to Jew. Right? Judea, Jew, Judah, Jew. So Jewish, so what's called Judaism, it's very easy to understand what Judaism is. It's Jewishism.
Yeah.
It's Jewishism, kind of like what you might call white racism. It's the ultimate racist, supremacist, even murderous, genocidal theology and even political entity in the history of the world. And if you look at what you read about the massacres and so forth, of course, in Jewish history of Gentiles, different kinds of Gentiles. In some verses, they talk about 10 different tribes of Gentiles are all evils of humanity. The New Testament says real clearly that the Jews are enemies of Jesus Christ and of all mankind, which is kind of interesting, this tiny percentage of humanity. And Judaism is about this messianic idea that Jews have a right to control the whole world and to basically create a world dictatorship. And that's, by the way, the source of what people oppose when they say they're opposed to globalism. The ultimate globalism is Judaism. and the people behind the so-called globalist movement and the neocons trying to control the world by controlling America, it's very, very Jewish. It's very Judaic. Judaism is Jewishness. And I will always put in a very special position in my memory when I was watching the Academy Award 2 years ago and they had the Jewish producer or the Jewish director of the film Zones of Interest about Auschwitz or something. And he gets up there and he says, and he was opposed to what was going on in Gaza. Good for him. And he says, quote, powerful word. He says, we stand here. He and his fellow Jews who were there say, we stand here as men who we repudiate their Jewishness, our Jewishness. Isn't that interesting? What does he mean by repudiating?
That's what's needed.
But Jewishness is what you call the, what Charlie Kirk called the stereotypical Jew, right? I often quote, you know, I quote in my book, if you remember in my book, and those of you who've read it listening, I'm sure a lot of you have read my book. I have a big, long quote by Steven Steinlight. He was head of the affairs, national affairs of the American Jewish Committee, the largest Jewish organization in America. He writes a big essay in there. He admits, right? He says, when I grew up, I was like a typical Jew, my generation. Every summer, we went to Jewish summer camp. And there, we dressed in a uniform, we call, you know, reflecting the colors of Israel. We sang songs of Israel. We pledged allegiance to the state of Israel. And we were taught to believe that Jews were the chosen people and that Gentiles were our enemies, that Gentiles were full of hatred toward us. And he literally just lays it all out. He admits that. And what he says is that even though the Gentiles even were presented then when America, that was when America was a 90% white country, by the way, when he was a kid in summer camp. He's saying that, well, as bad as Gentiles are, these Arabics coming in are worse than these white Gentiles. And the reason why he said that was because white Gentiles have been so propagandized by a lifetime of Jewish propaganda, while these Arabs that have come in, some of these Palestinians and others, they know what Jews are. And by the way, a lot of whites know what Jews are. And that's why this massive wave of opposition to Jewishness and Judaism, and by the way, it's Judaism, one of the most important things that I'm doing, Dr. Slattery, and I think what you're doing, is we understand that the biggest danger we have is not so much the open Jews who state what they state, but it's the people who basically say they're our friends and they oppose Judaism. They don't know. They say they oppose Zionism and they oppose Netanyahu and they oppose this genocide, which is so obvious to the world of the Jewish state. And then they immediately tell us that, well, what's going on in Israel is really against the Jewish religion. And then they always preyed on a few of these strange, incredibly unlikely rabbis that get up there and they say, oh yeah, Judaism is about loving everybody and kindness to everybody. It's those damn Zionists. They've supplemented or they've taken over Judaism. No,
that's not working anymore, buddy.
It's exactly the opposite. Exactly the right.
It's not Zionism working
became,
anymore.
Zionism came out of Judaism like a mother's son comes out of a woman's womb. You know,
like pus comes out of a wound.
I knew you'd say something colorful.
Well, that's what it is. It's a scourge. It's a pestilence. It's a biological issue.
I understand your feelings because. How can you not feel that way when you see the amount of evil that's presented? That doesn't mean I despise and hate every Jew or want to hurt innocent Jews or kill them.
No, neither do I.
That's right. But it does mean that we recognize that Jews are a threat. And to say the word Jews is completely appropriate. If it was the French that infiltrated our government who were trying to turn America for for French wars, to have Americans go die for French interests while the French, you know, didn't fight so much in those wars like the Iraq war. If they were doing it, we'd say the damn French, right?
We'd stop eating French fries.
Exactly. Think about all the media, Jewish media, that tells us about Russian atrocities and Russian disinformation and Russian everything. When the disinformation presented to us of the Hunter Biden laptop wasn't Russian disinformation saying that the laptop was real. It was Jewish disinformation saying the laptop wasn't real, that the laptop was Russian disinformation. And then they blocked whole newspapers, famous newspapers in America, for even sharing that data 2 to 3 weeks prior to the election in the critical days of the last few days. And by the way, in that election that Trump lost, he lost by the skin of his teeth. And
maybe if it was legitimate.
Well, whatever. But whatever the result was, that wouldn't have happened if the Hunter Biden laptop was revealed by the media as absolutely responsible in doing so. It was real. And the Hunter Biden laptop exposed tremendous corruption in Biden's administration. And, of course, all the facts were there for anybody to report. I was reporting them all during this time on my radio program and my other interviews that I did. I pointed out that Biden himself went to Ukraine and threatened the prosecutor in the nation of Ukraine that if you didn't stop your prosecution of Burisma Oil, which is what Hunter Biden was getting his bribes from, and Biden was getting a lot, you know, bribes from that, right in the Hunter Biden laptop and in the emails and everything. He talks about, Hunter Biden talks about, and we got to save some for the big boy, the big guy. Who is the big guy? Well, we know who the big guy is. It's Daddy. And the way they did this very conveniently was, he owned this property out in California on the West Coast, which he almost never used. So his son stayed there. So the son was getting $60,000 a month rent for the house in California. You know, that was totally inappropriate for a salary, but he was getting that. And so it was a way for him to feed the money he was getting for Burisma by having influence with the, you know, the vice president of the United States, or, you know, one of the people who was, you know, part of our government. But anyway, so it's like, this is the realities of disinformation. Well, anyway, let's watch this thing. It's pretty interesting.
All righty then.
Plug it in.
I'll raise my hands
and signal you, and I'll say stop. If I want to say
it's up on the screen, right?
I know. Yeah. I see.
Yeah. You don't have to do your hands. Just talk, because right. I might not see it.
All right. Can you hear me well?
Yeah, okay. I hear you well.
Good.
Meghan McCain tweeted that Candace Owens drops the hammer.
Oh, this is going to be.
She
great.
Shares my She's favorite. This is the favorite tweet comeback of all time. Charlie said, Meghan McCain is a piece of. So recently, people have been posting their private text messages with Charlie Kirk to show what Charlie Kirk really thought about the Iran war. Brett Weinstein did that. Of course, Candace Owens has been posting the text messages of Charlie Kirk to prove people that he had turned against Israel and that they were lying about the meeting they had with him out at the Hamptons right before he was assassinated. And so he does this. He says, Charlie Kirk did not, she tweets this out. Charlie Kirk did not support Ben Shapiro's treatment of people over Israel. He also did not support Talmudic Judaism in general. I am done with the silence of Turning Point on this issue. He was being morally blackmailed for over a year, and he had had enough. And that's from March 13th at 8:46 a.m. She tweeted that out. And here are the text messages she posts. So it says, stand for truth. The people are with you. I know, been through enough of these to know that truth always wins in the end. And Charlie says, by the way, he was standing on a couch saying that about Ben Shapiro. And so that's, I think this is right around when Ben Shapiro got up on a couch at some kind of gathering and started denouncing Candace Owens.
Dave.
And so.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know how it got muted, but it got muted anyway. So
what got muted?
My voice. My
Did you hit the space bar?
I don't know. I could have. But anyway, the point is I wanted to say a couple things about this while we're going into this so people have a framework of what's going on here. Okay. So as you know, when Charlie Kirk was assassinated, and this is a lot of evidence about who assassinated and the motives people would have. Okay. The facts are very, very clearly that Charlie Kirk was saying all kinds of things that Jews and Netanyahu and the entire Jewish control over America were really getting concerned about. And he was writing tweets to this to people like Candace Owens. So they have copies of the original tweets, which you can go back in Wayback Engines and find these are true and authentic. He was talking to many of his friends and saying that these Jews are insane, that they're going to get us in this insane war with Iran. He went to the White House to plead with Trump not to do the first war. And certainly he would have been a big opponent to this disastrous war. Now, here's the situation. The biggest project that Netanyahu wanted to do and Israel's wanted to do over the last 50 years is to do what's going on right now. And they love this. They have America take the biggest heat and do the biggest bombing and the biggest expenses and the biggest danger of what's going to happen here, because America's going to be blamed for this, even though it was Israel leading America into this war. That's all fact, right? But so he would have been right on the edge of this. In fact, Candace Owen, in fact, played, another person played it too, a very fascinating interview with Charlie Kirk just a couple of weeks before he was murdered, right? Saying, we cannot go into another Iran war. It's going to be a disaster for America. It's going to cost lives. It's going to hurt this country. And it's a horrible thing. And, you know, we can't have this. Now, what happened was, so the Jews knew this. And we can see a lot of quotes by Jews, in fact, and you'll see some of them here, saying that Charlie Kirk is an enemy of the Jewish people. He's an anti-Semite. He's having Candace Owens on his platforms. He's having, you know, Tucker Carlson on his platform saying that Israel is an enemy of Christians, an enemy of our people, an enemy of our nation, that they're controlling our political process. They said, we can't have that. That Charlie Kirk must be opposed. He must be, you know, removed, in effect. Now, just before he was shot to death, just a couple of days earlier than that, Charlie Kirk, in an open debate, I don't know if this is shown in this particular concept. These are other emails just showing and Twitter or X posts and other posts in social media showing what Charlie was saying to other people. So just before he was shot, he said, and he absolutely X'd, he put it in there, that he was afraid for his life. He said, they're going to kill me. And this is when he's talking about these Jews being stereotypical and how much hatefulness they had from them. And he was describing them as stereotypical Jews. Now, if you're here's the situation. Anytime you have a crime, the biggest issue is motive. Motive is the first thing that any detective, any police force, any investigative forces look for. Motive, 9 times out of 10, the people with the biggest motive are the ones guilty of the murder or the crime or whatever crime happened. Motive. And there's no question about the fact that a lot of people thought Charlie Kirk could become president. He had 30 million followers. He had huge amounts of Christian followers, including a lot of Christian, what do you call them, Christian Zionists, which is kind of weird because it's like saying Christian Satanists, which doesn't make any sense, Christian Antichrists. But anyway, there were huge amounts of even Christian Zionists who were following. I mean, he took kind of a favorable approach toward Israel. But Charlie Kirk came to realize that Israel was Antichrist, that Israel was Antichrist, that Judaism was Antichrist. He became to realize this. Now, because he had so much influence and because he was letting on these major speakers like Tucker Carlson, Candace Owens, another Jew who, by the way, is very critical of Israel and Zionism and the takeover of the American government. Others that were talking about the Israeli takeover of the American Congress, the Zionist occupied government. When they saw him doing this, it was an existential threat. Now, there's no country in the world that's engaged more in assassinations cross-border outside of their own country. Israel's killed more people around the world than the American government. And we've killed and assassinated a lot of people around the world. But we're also in, you know, we got bases in 80 nations. We're trying to control the world. But why are we trying to control the world? It's not we. It's they. It's the Jewish neocons who've controlled American policy that led us into Iraq, that led us into Afghanistan, that led us into this Iran war. That's who let us in. Now, here's the situation. Charlie Kirk, if he was allowed to keep on, he would have been the end of Israel. Because without the Christian supporters and without the conservative right, the Republicans, they had no support. The Democrats were already, they were losing support all the time. Now, as it is now, even Republicans are changing and even Christian evangelicals are changing. Even despite the fact that they silenced Charlie Kirk, if he would have kept going on, he would have been one of the biggest spokesmen of the evil of this war in Iran, the vileness of this war. So they needed to kill him. And they've always engaged in that kind of thing. If you look at Wikipedia, they have page after page after page after page of Jewish assassinations all over the world. I think there's no doubt that they killed Kennedy. Because he was a threat, because he was having a big fight with Ben-Gurion. I'll just give you one example of that. Okay, as we know, we got all the letters and the, not wasn't so much emails, I think some of it was emails, but texts and so forth and teletypes and phone conversations Kennedy was having with Ben-Gurion, who was then the head of Israel. And these conversations were so caustic, it was unbelievable. So Kennedy laid down the law to Ben-Gurion. He was the first prime minister of Israel and the famous prime minister of Israel. And
Grun was his real name.
Yeah, whatever.
He was a Polish Jew.
Ben-Gurion. And by the way, even though, and this is another important point, you see, in Judaism, you don't have to believe in God. I know that sounds strange because we grew up with Judaism, with belief in God and all that. But they evolved in their belief in God. You can just read My Jewish Learning, which is from the biggest Jewish website in the world, done by religious Jews and secular Jews. And it basically talks about how Jewish view of God evolved to believe from an anthropomorphic God to a Jewish God that was really morphed into the Jewish people. Because what Chabad Lubavitch does, which we talk about right out of the White House, you got Trump going to pray at Chabad Lubavitch. They say that Jews are of the absolute tissue and issue of God. And it's in Jewish genes. In other words, God is in their genes, meaning that Jews are God. And that's why Jews can say anything they want to about this guy named Yahweh. They can say anything they want to about that God. They can be an atheist in Judaism. It's not a big deal. Because they believe they're the Jews and their bloodline is what's important. And their bloodline comes before anything else. In the Talmud, it says Jews argue with God and defeat him. And in the Old Testament, at one point, it says, and in the Jewish scriptures, the other aspects of Jewish books, it says legitimately right here, God says, oh, my children, the Jewish people defeated me. They defeated me. In the whole story of Moses at the top of Mount Sinai, God says, I've decided to wipe you guys out. You Jews are the most evil people. You're always getting involved in evil. And Moses says to God, ultimately, tries to say, oh, please don't do this. And then God says, no, I'm going to have to get rid of you. You're just nothing but evil people. We'll start off with you, Moses. You seem to be a decent guy. But that's it. I'm going to destroy them all. And then Moses gives an ultimatum now. He threatens God, and he says to God, he says, okay, now this is what's written down by the Jewish scribes. So this is not what God said. This is what Jewish scribes said that put Jews in a powerful position here. Just understand that. Understand that the Old Testament, and New Testament, it's written by men. And even though we want to think that it's written by the finger of God, it's really not. Because even the Old Testament says, like Jeremiah says, beware the lying pen of the scribes. Jesus Christ, during his whole ministry, a dozen different times said that beware of the lying scribes. Beware of the lying scribes. They were the ones who told us the image of God. And Jesus said the only image of God that you can get, the only image of God that's true is what I say to you. He's my father.
Dave, let's get a quick question before we go back to the video. Because we only watched like a minute of the video.
Well, okay, let me wrap this up. This is an important little preface to understand what's going on here. So he literally says this. So ultimately, God relents because Moses says, I'm sorry, but if you go against my people, I'm going to have to go against you. You can blot me out of your book. It's in Exodus. You can read it. It's in the Talmud. You can read it. So you can research it. If you don't believe me, just read this stuff, right? And so he relents because Moses threatened that he'd go against the Jews. But this is because this is what the Jews wrote down about this instance. So let's go on with the video.
All right. Let's do this question first, and we'll come back to the video.
Okay.
Gary Duke, you guys familiar with the Frankist movement?
I am, but I think that's a very small sliver of Judaism. I know Candace Owens has a lot of emphasis on the Frankist movements. It was some of these Jews, one of the many different movements. Jews had influence at one time, a great deal of influence in what was Masonry, even though they had different versions of Masonry, one that included Jews, one that had no Jews in it, right? And Masonry had a little bit of its propulsion because of the fact that Jewish, or not Jewish, but Gentile aristocrats ruled Great Britain, and they were appointed by the king. So there were lots of young men and women who were entrepreneurs, who were workers, owned successful farms and ranches and companies and so forth. But if they got into a court problem with these aristocrats by blood who were appointed by the king, they got into trouble. The judges and the aristocrats would always vote against them. So they saw Masonry, Christians did actually, as well as Jews, but they saw Masonry as a way to make the scales a little more even between average working people who weren't of aristocratic blood necessarily, but were successful businessmen, successful ranchers, farmers, and so forth, who felt a lot of oppression from the aristocratic class. And that was why Masonry had a big push. Now, there were also Masons that were involved in the biggest banking houses of Europe. Now, the Frankists were another one of these slivers of Jews. There were also people called the Illuminati and other aspects. So Frankists, you know, it's a factor, but it's not the factor. The essential factor, which you can't forget, you must never forget, is that Judaism is nothing more than a master race ideology that literally says all Gentiles must lick the dirt off of the feet of Jews, and the Gentile nations of the world have to bring all their treasure to the Jews. Now, that is in the Old Testament, but that doesn't mean it's valid. The same way that Jesus Christ said an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth is not valid. You must try to de-escalate, not fight each other, not go to vengeful activity. And Jesus said clearly that the word of God, my father and me, we love all mankind, and you got to treat everybody fairly. He didn't say you couldn't be a Jew or you couldn't be a Roman or a Greek, which is part of our great ancestry, or you couldn't be a white person or you couldn't be an Asian person or anything, or a Samaritan, which they hated. He didn't say that. He said every people has a right to be free. But every people has no right, no people has a right to exploit or harm other people. And the very essence of Judaism was Jews were a master race that were going to be allowed or supported to be a tyranny over the entire world. So that's important. So people have to get clear about the fact that the New Testament was, in fact, a new covenant. And it was a covenant where Jesus and his father said, we love all mankind. I'm coming to save the whole world, not just Jews. I'm coming to bring peace among mankind and progress to mankind and not suffer mankind to jealousy and hatred and plagues. Jesus brought no plagues. He brought no massacres. He brought nothing. When the people were hungry, he fed them. He didn't send them scorpions or snakes, as some of the things in the Old Testament have, in terms of the Jewish people escaping from Egypt. Anyway, let's go on.
All right.
Oh, stand for truth, he says. People are with you. I know, been through enough of these to know that all truth always wins. By the way, he was standing on a couch. LOL, ha ha ha, too good. He's unhinged, stay the course. So that's Charlie Kirk telling Candace Owens, don't worry about Ben Shapiro smearing you in public, stay the course. There are some verses in the Talmud that will blow your mind, he says to Candace. Candace says, I'm aware of them. The Talmud is not biblical, but it's their rabbinical interpretations of Judaism.
Wait, Shabbat Shalom?
So here is Charlie going directly hard at the Talmudic Jews. She says, I did a deep dive one week. And he says, thought crime. So you're not supposed to look into what the Jews are actually saying, the Talmudic Jews. You're not supposed to look into any of that. Those are thought crimes. Here's another one.
Anyway, before we go on, pause. Let's pause again now. It's very important to say. And I don't blame him. He doesn't know about all this. It's the Talmud is not a misconception, or it's not exactly a total misinterpretation of Judaism. It's the epitome of Judaism. It's Judaism is saying that the holy seed of the Jews has a right to rule all over the world, and all the Gentile nations must bring all their treasures to the Jews, like Goldman Sachs and these other Jewish international financiers. But remember, Christ brought a New Testament where he said God's love was for all people. There were no chosen people. In fact, the Jews would say to Christ, they'd say, oh, look, they said, they told Christ, who is your father? Like your father is some Roman soldier or something. And they accused of Christ to be a bastard. I hate to even say those words and with the name of Jesus Christ, even near those words. That's the Jewish view of Christ, right? And Christ said, listen, he said, and the Jews said, we know who our father is. Who's your father? And Jesus said, okay. You say your father's Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and all those others, right? He says, but you know what? Those people are those, whatever, those ancestors of yours that you're claiming. God could raise them up from stones if he wanted to. Stones. In other words, there was nothing special about them. He could make those prophets of Judaism from stones. No big deal, right? The important thing wasn't your lineage. You are not entitled to rule the world because you're Jews. You are entitled to getting an eternal life and living peacefully and with a golden rule with all people. And you're entitled to preserving your own traditions, whatever you want, dietary or whatever. But you're not entitled to exploit, enslave, murder, kill, genocide, rape humanity. That's what Jesus's message was. So not only did it overturn so many things when he said, it said, right? He said, for instance, he said about the Sabbath. It said, you've got to obey the Sabbath. You can't even pick up twigs on the Sabbath. Otherwise, you get stoned to death. Jesus Christ went out with his disciples in the fields when they were hungry, and they picked up more than twigs. They picked up all kinds of food. They did work on the Sabbath because they needed it to survive. And Jesus said, so he countered with the law. He also, in the New Testament and the work of Christ, one of the cornerstones of Judaism was, in fact, definitely, without any question, was circumcision. And circumcision was a tool to preserve the holy seed, because that way no Gentile would dare to convert if you had to get some rabbi cut off your parts of your private parts, the most painful thing you could imagine, get diseased from it, maybe die from it, with the full, if you're an adult male, your organs are not little, your reproductive organs are very tiny in comparison with the body. As you get older, they're huge. And when you have this circumcision, it's horrific. You can get diseased. You can lose your reproductive organs. You can lose your life easily. It puts you down. That is a barrier for having the holy seed be compromised. Plus, in the Old Testament, Jews killed 24,000 Jews and many Midianite women and so forth because Jews married them. Midianites were like brothers and sisters to Jews. I mean, they were so close genetically, as close as Angles are to Saxons, you know, the Anglo-Saxon people. You know, Europeans have always intermarried a degree. Jews had as closeness, really, to the Midianites, as much more closer to Midianites than the fact that many millions of Germans are married to dark Italians, millions of Germans are married to Spaniards, millions of Germans are married to Greeks and other people, millions of Germans are married to Russians and Slavic peoples. I mean, the most racist ideology in the history of the world was Judaism. Let's go on. Did you like that interjection?
Oh, of course.
All right, let's go.
All right.
So there's the Talmud. That's the most important thing.
He says, listening, amazing. Your show rocks, by the way. Thank you. The defense on Twitter today, the Jews were very angry at me again today. Go figure. She says, their expectation is that you defend them, but they are silent if anything happens to Christians. It's sick, he says. Candace says, and they expect you to be silent if anything happens to Christians. So horrible. Charlie says, I'm over it. The amount of texts I got, again, over that tweet was honestly beyond belief. I even tweeted with all disclaimers. She says, it's why I don't use my platform to defend them. When I realized it was one-sided and how vicious they would get if I didn't do their bidding, I was just done with it. They should read How to Win Friends and Influence People. They push so many allies away. So she's talking about the Zionists, and so is he.
Okay, hold it.
And so...
Let's pause one more time. This is a very perfect point. No, she's not just talking about the Zionists. And Charlie Kirk wasn't just talking about the Zionists. She's talking about Judaism. She's talking about Jews as a group, because Judaism is the most racist religion in the world. Now, what do Jews say about Christ? If you read the Jewish Talmud, if you read Jewish doctrine, if you read the Jewish leadership, if you read Maimonides, who's also called Rambam of the Jews, if you read Jews historically, guess what individual, actually God, deity, that they hate more than any other individual in the history of the world, the personage they hate more than any other in the whole world, Judaism does. It's Jesus Christ. They hated him so much. The Jewish Talmud, and by the way, when they talked about the Talmud here, is like, oh, well, they didn't like the way the Talmud was interpreted. Again, no, the Talmud is the leading study, is the leading doctrine of the Jewish people. That, like, they explain it as the heartbeat, the heartblood of Judaism. So again, Judaism is based primarily in Talmudic studies. Jews, for instance, have what's called yeshiva. Yeshiva is the highest educational institutions of Jews all over the world. This is all fact. You can look it up. You can find out. So what do yeshivas do? What do yeshivas do? Are they devoted to the study of the Talmud exclusively? Or the Tanakh, which is the other books of the Bible? No. They're devoted to the Talmud. They're devoted to the Zohar. They're devoted to the Kabbalah. These were all part of the so-called Torah. They're devoted to the, the Soma, Tanya. And they are, and the yeshivas, you can read about this. Just do a Google search and act like you're a Jew. You might get a better, more clear and honest answer. Just say, what does the yeshiva, the Jewish higher institutions, which millions of Jews study under as the basis of Judaism, what do they study more of, the Talmud or the Pentateuch, the Talmud or the Tanakh? And they'll answer you. 95% of it is Talmudic. Every Jew is required to read through the Talmud entirely, its many books, twice and know it by heart. This is what they deeply study. The Talmud is the very root of the Jewish law, the Jewish halakha law. And now, what does the Talmud say about Jesus Christ? It's very clear. It says Onkelos, who is a necromancer, right? A necromancer, by the way, for shorthand knowledge of this, a necromancer is a sorcerer. A necromancer is known historically. You can look it up in the dictionary. A necromancer is a man who what's the word for it? He recalls dead people from the grave for evil purposes, like to make them zombies, to do murders for his people or robberies or the haunted or whatever. A necromancer is absolutely a sorcerer. Now, the same institutions, the same Talmud that calls Jesus a sorcerer, and the same Jewish scribes that call Jesus a sorcerer, and which is clearly written in the New Testament, are the same Jews that says Jesus Christ, right, was a sorcerer. And they allege that Jewish sorcerers, holy Jewish sorcerers, Onkelos was the guy's name that did this, and the Jews brought Jesus from the dead so they could first of all get him. It's supposedly, this is all lies, of course, vicious lies about Christ, so they could get him to denounce his followers, to denounce himself and his teachings, how this was in violation of God. This would, and this is what they say in the Talmud. You can find the quotations. It's easy to find them. They do exist, right? It says that they rose Jesus from the dead, and then they start interviewing him, and they ask Jesus, so what is it? What did you do? What wrong things did you do? And he said, oh, I did terrible things because I disabused the Jewish people. And he just goes on and on. He says, and what do you deserve? What does anybody who does the thing that you did, what do they deserve? And they have Jesus. They allege that Jesus said, well, anybody who did what I did deserves to be boiled in human excrement for all of eternity. This is the official. I mean, this is not.
They're sick fucks.
This is not refuted in any way in the Talmud. And people say the Talmud's got all sorts of different things. Well, if they had a debate about this, where's the debate? There's no debate about this in the New Testament. There's lots of talk about other people doing this. There's no debate, really, about the fact that it says that to the Jews say that only Gentiles are men. That's clear. That's even what the Jewish Encyclopedia says, which is a compendium of that. And that's what they say the Talmud says, right? And it also says that the best of Gentiles must be murdered the same way that the best of snakes must have their heads crushed. They say it's a meritorious deed to get their hands on the wealth of Gentiles, to take their property. Their property, Gentiles' property, is like unclaimed land of the desert. That's what the Jewish Talmud says, that it's meritorious to deceive Gentiles. Even in the Old Testament, again, this is before Jesus revised the Old Testament and taught us the new law of loving everybody equally, right? In the Old Testament, it says that Jews cannot practice usury against fellow Jews. That's forbidden. But they are very happy to practice usury against Gentiles. What is usury? It's egregious interest rates that destroy people. Maimonides said it this way. He said that usury is like biting. It's called nesek, which is the Hebrew word for biting. Because when you loan people the money, and by the way, the Old Testament says that Jews can only lend money because they know how evil the system of usury is for Jews or anybody in the world. So Jews cannot borrow money, but they can only lend money to the Gentiles.
Have you heard that that they get a special interest rate with some of these mortgage companies? Have you heard of that, Dave?
Well, of course, that's fellow Jews. That's the Holy Seed. And that's
now, what's the name of it? The technical, there's a technical term for it.
I don't know which term the term for usury in the Jewish language.
Not usury, just that when a Jew takes out a mortgage, that they will get a special rate that they would have to pay
interest. I don't know
the
Hebrew word for it, but look, they're for any way in the world to defraud Gentiles and take the money of Gentiles. That's a meritorious deed, according to the Talmud. And that's no exaggeration. The Talmud says that only Jews are men. And back in those times, you know, we used to use the word for mankind, which is also womankind, right? We used to use the word mankind, right? And that's considered misogynistic. And we used to say, you know, finally we became men. You know, and that was pretty patriarchal. That's sure it is. But the truth is that what men meant was people, was human beings. The Talmud says that only Jews are human beings, that Gentiles are on the animal level. And animal level have no civil rights and no human rights. Judaism is the most radical, racist, tyrannical, murderous, horrific, enslaving group in the history of the world. And that's why one reason why the Jews were the great heads of the slave trade, not just in the Atlantic slave trade. They were the ones who owned the slave ships, the great majority of them, from America to the Africans. And Jews in America were much more likely to be slaveholders than Gentiles were. I'll give you an example. 2% of Gentiles, white non-Jews in the South, were slaveholders, right? In the Jewish households, according to the Jewish historians, which I found and sorted out from the Jewish historical societies, Jewish households in the United States of America, 40% of Jewish household had black slaves. 40% as compared to 2%. So only 1% of Americans had black slaves, and that's 1% too many. We shouldn't have slavery. But Jews were not only the enslaving a lot of the people that enslaved, but they were also the people who ran the slave trade. And it's arguable that the slave trade was the most evil part of the whole African slave trade, because it was a terrible 2 or 3 month passage. They just died like flies in these ships. They didn't take care of them. They died in their own excrement, disease, and so forth. And these were Jewish-run ships. These were Jewish-owned ships. And this is one of those big secrets held by the Jews.
Dave, it's called Heder Iska.
Heder Iska. There you go. Thank
Heard
you.
Heard of that?
Yes, I have. So
this is a financing structure that complies with halakha by recharacterizing the transaction as a partnership investment to avoid paying interest.
Well, that's good. This is what, you know, what is this exactly? So we all know about Jewish usury. We all know how loan sharking is one of the greatest crimes in the world. Every country disallows it. But all interest and all usury, all loaning of money before about 100 years ago, was all loan sharking because there was no control over it. You understand? The average person didn't know how to make out all these financial things and what compact entry was. The point is that poor people who might be landowners, they might own land, property, homes, businesses, whatever, they were up to snuff on these stuff like Jews were. So they got, but all they knew is they were desperately, they had a crop failure or their house burned down, or their barn burned down, and they're trying to feed their families. They have no money, and they knew they had to have money. So when they were desperate for money to save their loved ones, you know, the Jews said, oh, don't worry about it. It's okay. I'm going, it's all right. You know, I'm going to save you. We want to help your family here. We'll loan you the money. And then you look at the fine print, right? And it was a pound of flesh, right? And that's exactly what Shakespeare's famous book, The Merchant of Venice, was. And by the way, another good example of that. For a long time in New York City, so Shakespeare had many novels, many great books, and he had a lot of anti-Jewish quotations in his novels because he knew what Jews were as a group. I'm not saying every Jew, but he knew what they were. So the interesting thing is, in New York City, the Jews organized, and they got Merchant of Venice, the great Shakespeare play Merchant of Venice, banned in New York City. Same way they worked to get Birth of a Nation banned. The Deborah Griffiths great show about the rise of a Klan, not as an evil organization, but one getting out these carpetbaggers and these exploiters of both blacks and whites in America. That's kind of interesting. But here's the issue that we got to go into depth a little bit here. We're not going to go too much in depth because we got many people waiting to listen and ask questions. But here's the deal that we have to really consider so carefully. We got to dwell on this very honestly, right? So just look at the Merchant of Venice, how that was banned by the Jews. Now, later on, because of modern media and modern printing, everybody was getting these. And when you printed the books of Shakespeare, it was kind of hard to leave out Merchant of Venice. And so many people were reading this book, there was no way they could suppress it. And by trying to suppress this book in New York City and other places, they had big campaigns to do it, to outlaw it in America, in fact. And they had other campaigns in Europe to do the same thing as anti-Semitic. So eventually they said, we can't stop it. If we keep talking about it, it's just people are going to want to read it more. So finally, when they had a big composite where they played all the plays of Shakespeare, they knew if they left out Merchant of Venice, you know, and I think it was on NPR, not National Public Radio, it was on PBS. They played all the plays of Shakespeare. They also included The Merchant of Venice. But they had this long monologue to start the movie, and they had just took a few excerpted quotes out of the Bible that tried to make Shylock a sympathetic figure. If you actually see the movie Merchant of Venice, starring the great Italian actor, the same guy that played in Sin of a Woman, that
Al Pacino.
So if you see that film, right, you know, it's very clear Shylock was a crap head. He hated Antonio. He hated Gentiles. And he wanted to get Antonio because Antonio didn't like Jews, right? And apparently supposedly spit upon him at one time. So he was determined to destroy Antonio, to kill him, right, and to murder him. So he loaned him this money, and in the contract he put in this contract that if you fail in every penny of this contract in any way, not only do you get an economic penalty, which Antonio was willing to endorse, and a big economic penalty, but you get a penalty of taking a pound of your flesh, a pound of your flesh. And by the way, you can't take a pound of flesh without basically killing somebody, especially in those days. That's impossible. You can't take a pound of flesh. Anyway, so that was, you know, part of the thing. And so when it came to court, they came to a court in Venezia, and they came to court, and it was a very brilliant attorney that Antonio had, right? So they're interviewing Shylock. That's his name, Shylock. And they said, well, okay, so, sir, but by this contract, you're entitled to do what you want to do. And he says, oh, thank you, you great jurist, so true, you know. But then they dropped the weight on the guy, and they said, only problem is that when you take a pound of flesh, that doesn't give you the right to even one drop of blood. It's a pound of flesh, no blood. So if you take a single drop of blood, you're in violation of harming a citizen of Venice gravely, right? And you're subject to even the death penalty for taking unlawfully, you know, any part of a human being, their blood or whatever, right? And said, so we'll have to agree with you. Okay, you know, you have the right to do this. But if you don't take this right, then what are you going to do? He said, okay, I'll take the added money now. I'll take the added money. It's no problem. He was going to give me twice the money. And the juror then, his attorney, says to the court and says to Shylock, he says, no, you're only entitled to what you wanted, the pound of flesh. But if you take one blood, let's get that scales out, because as you cut into the flesh, he had Antonio bare his chest and everything, or cut out this pound of flesh. And they say, but if you take one drop of blood, or if you cause any harm to come to this man, you will be executed by the state for murder, or for, you know, this transgression. Obviously, it is murder, but, you know, you will be tried, and you will be forfeit of all your gold and all your family's treasure. You'll be forfeit of all those things as a criminal. So anyway, that it's a great movie because it's got a good and happy ending. But the interesting thing is the way they tailored this. This is an interesting story. And so we could do 2 hours on this one film, on this one story, this one play by Shakespeare, because there's so many things to learn from it. For instance, in this...
Dave, you want to get back to the video?
I will, but one second, one more important little point, which I think people will enjoy the truth in this, right? So in the play, what they did to make Shylock look like sympathetic, they played the speech very prominently. There were a lot of things they couldn't put in this short movie. They played the speech by Shylock, And he's very plaintive, typical Jew. He's always the victim. He says, don't you understand? I had this loan and I deserve my pound of flesh. And does a Jew not bleed when you cut him? Does a Jew not cry when you prick him? Does it, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Does a Jew not have pain when you make him suffer? You know, let's find out. When they played that up, to try to make him as sympathetic as possible. And then he's sharpening up his knives, ready to dive in and murder Antonio. And Antonio's mission, by the way, was totally unselfish. He had ships out, but his good friend was getting married and he needed a dowry for this aristocratic woman whom he loved. And he needed a dowry for her and he had to raise the money. So I asked Antonio, he had no money. He was aristocratic, but no wealth. And so he asked his friend Antonio, and Antonio said, well, I don't really have the money. I'd have to borrow it. His friend says, well, then don't do it. Don't do it. And then he said, you know, I've got to borrow it from the head for the Jew, right? Shylock. And he did. And then when he found out about the contract, he urged, he begged Antonio not to sign this agreement, right? And Antonio said, well, I've got three ships out. They'll probably come in. We'll be okay. We got to help you. This is your whole life's ahead of you. And by the way, I'm not going to give you all the details, but the movie has a real happy ending. It's one movie you need to download, absolutely download and watch, because it's a very, very beautiful movie with a good and a happy ending. The Christians prevail, and the Jewish Shylock, money-lending murderer, ends up suffering his
job. We'll play it one day. All right, we got about 9 minutes left on this video.
All right, let's go.
All right, well, you don't have much left in the show, so let it play.
Well, ready? We got another hour, don't we, after this?
Yeah, but I mean, let's we got go. The questions.
I say good for them. I just want, for the record, I just want everybody to know that I'm totally hinged. Mm-hmm. You should hear me getting out of an easy chair. Am I right? Yeah. Come on.
I was never hinged.
So when he says Talmudic, the Talmud, I don't know what is that. That's no big deal. It's just Mein Kampf for Zionists. But anyway,
it's like a chat room from back in the day. Where you know, so if you ever go on the worst of 4chan, that's what it is. But
it's way more radical racist than Mein Kampf.
Hey, Croc, do you think Candace is getting off on Charlie? Is grifting off of Charlie? Croc says no. I don't think Candace is grifting. These 2023 DMs show Charlie privately aligned with her on Talmud critiques, Shapiro's tactics, and one-sided expectations around Israel, views he kept quieter publicly amid pressure. Posting them now contextualizes Turning Point's silence and his moral blackmail, which matches her consistent record on the topic for years. Timing after his death invites skepticism, but the content isn't fabricated or new for her. Wow. Candace Owens then tweets out, Charlie and I stayed in constant communication over this issue. On the phone and via text, our friendship never ended. Ben Shapiro was directing Jewish donors to begin to squeeze him with financial and reputational threats after the Daily Wire fired Candace. This is how Ben operates behind the scenes. Okay. Meghan McCain then jumps in. Meghan McCain, stop sharing dead people's text messages. You're absolute psychopaths.
What is she talking about?
What a terrible woman.
She's calling someone else a psychopath.
Wait, why can't I share a dead person's text message if it helps my argument?
This is the person that supported John McCain. So
you're telling me that this bitch, Arthur Kirk, could take over Charlie's entire shit? And there's no problem.
TPUSA could claim to speak for him now that he's dead.
They made an AI of him saying, give the business to my wife for the fucking moron whales that show up at that imbecile concert. You're telling me that that's bad to share the text messages that show us the truth. Fuck you. And fuck your dad too, bitch.
I like what Spencer Guffrey says here. He says, stop it. Those text messages are really damaging to the lies we are trying to perpetrate.
I love it. Repeat that.
Yo, her shitbag father's reason that POW MIA, him and Kerry conspired to make sure people know about the vets that were still there. That's why we had that problem.
Stop.
So after Megan tweets that we stop sharing dead people's text messages, you're absolute psychopaths.
Just share their political organization with their wife who was in on their murder.
So in your view, the real psychopaths aren't the people posting from Charlie Kirk's original accounts after his death, the ones deleting his podcast episodes, mm-hmm. publishing books in his name, or flipping his positions for political convenience?
Yeah, or your shitbag Satanist father, you fat pig.
No, the psychopaths are the people quoting him in his own words, just to make sure he isn't remembered differently from what he actually said. Right. Do I have that right, Meghan McCain?
You do, sir.
Twist.
Yeah, because her dad, that's how his legacy is.
Tweeting,
piece of shit, you
tweeting
know?
From Charlie's Twitter account and maintaining the Charlie Kirk show, that's okay. But sharing old texts crosses the line?
Right.
LOL, these people are actually real.
Don't listen to things that he actually said. Listen to things that we told you that he felt like, and he said Shalom Shabbat.
So
Shalom
after Meghan McCain tweeted that, Candace Owen drops the hammer.
Oh, this is going to be
She bad. Shares my She's favorite. This is the favorite tweet comeback of all time. Charlie said, Meghan McCain is a piece of shit.
I mean, you know, I can't not like Candace for that. I have to like Candace for that. That's really, what a beautiful.
She retweets.
What a hearty rejoinder from Candace Owens.
100%. Just bam. That's what a mic drop moment is. And then underneath, she says, pretending Charlie was friends with Ben Shapiro and filthy neocons like you simply won't be happening on my watch.
That's anti-Semitic.
She did not see this coming. Meghan McCain did not know that Charlie Kirk texted Candace Owens that she's a piece. She did not see this coming.
Yo, do you know some dumbass friend of mine said, what is a neocon? Someone my age, by the way, not a young person, because it's some talking point they must have learned at their dumb shit Zionist church. To go, what is even a neocon? Why you didn't look it up? They'll tell you what it is, you maniac.
Candace Owens keeps going. She says,
So I want to make something clear here. One of the opponents and who were trying to change Charlie Kirk and starting to go against him because of his anti-Jewish position, truly anti-Jewish, anti-Zionist position, truly anti-Zionist, anti-Israel position, truly anti-Israel, was Mr. Hammer. Now, Mr. Hammer pretends like he was a friend of Charlie and that Charlie supported the Jews all the way to the end. Well, Hammer produced a bunch of tweets. I guess we call them X's today. I don't know. And in the tweets, guess what he said? In two different tweets, it was a little bit slightly different wording, but it said to the effect, and this is what the wording was, that, quote, that anti-Semitism is embedded, is absolutely intrinsic in Europeans. It's in their DNA. Now, think about that. To say that Gentiles, all Gentiles, and that's 99.8% of the world's population, and it's not just white people, it's Asian people, it's black people, it's Amerindians, it's everybody, right?
Anyone that's not a Jew.
Exactly. So to say that anti-Semitism, which is one of the worst horrible things. In fact, Jews say that anti-Semites should be killed. Literally. They said they should be killed. It's the same thing as murdering Jews being anti-Semite. Now you think about that. But these people have the nerve to say you're anti-Semitic because you oppose Jewish genocide in Gaza. Are you oppose these lies? So this again, they absolutely prosecute themselves. Whenever they point a finger at you or me, are they're going to do a lot of fingers against Jimmy Dore, obviously, too. And they were pointing fingers about Charlie before he was killed. Now let's take what the last thing. I don't have to say anything more about Charlie here today. We could finish the video, but here's an important note to say. It seems like history repeats itself because in the Kennedy assassination, there's huge amounts of evidence that Kennedy and David Ben-Gurion absolutely hated each other. And Kennedy's threatened Ben-Gurion and said, if you build an atomic bomb, make one step toward that, we will absolutely demand inspections. We will not support you in the United Nations. We'll vote against you. We will sanction you. We will fight you. And we will be the enemies of the Jewish state. And we will not let you have an atomic weapon. He also said specifically that any Jewish organization in the United States, such as the that was the premier or the preamble to AIPAC, right, would have to be labeled, and which is what it should be labeled, and has to be promoted as a label for a foreign state. You had to register as a foreign actor for a foreign state so people know what's coming from that. These were both existential questions because it was critical for the Jews to get control over Congress. Of course, right? Now, the interesting thing is we know there's so much evidence. Even Rubenstein is another good example. Rubenstein is the guy that killed and to silence none other than Oswald. Oswald was the patsy. They could not afford. Oswald made a call to the CIA, to his handler, as soon as he was arrested. It's all in the records. We can prove that, right? He was an agent for people in the government, and the infiltration that was already going on in the American government, the American CIA, and American intelligence by the Mossad. So here's the interesting thing here. Just as Netanyahu came out immediately upon his assassination, I mean literally within minutes, and said, Charlie Kirk was the greatest friend we ever had. We love Charlie Kirk. Charlie Kirk was for us. He's wrapped around. They showed pictures of him wrapped around an Israeli flag. They didn't dare mention the fact that Charlie Kirk said he was finished with supporting them. He was afraid the Jews were going to kill him, right? But they immediately did that to know that a lot of people are going to look at motive, because when you find out what Charlie Kirk was saying about Jews, they knew they had to make sure that Charlie Kirk was not going to be associated as a person that spoke against the Jews, but as a person that loved Jews. And it was a big lie. So immediately upon Charlie Kirk's assassination, which I believe they orchestrated, I think the evidence is overwhelming because motive of what goes on. You don't know what goes on in state secret organizations and espionage groups like well, the Mossad or whatever else they have, Shin Bet or whatever. But you do know the motivations, and we do know that no state in the world has been more assassination prone than Israel, and that Charlie Kirk, by going against Israel with 30 million people supporting him, young people, and a lot of evangelicals, he would have completely subverted that and completely changed the Republican Party if he would have been allowed to be alive.
And the result is he's gone, supposedly.
And so he's a silent.
And it doesn't matter because we're getting there. Yeah, so they accomplished nothing.
We're still going to, well, it may have accomplished nothing, but there's no question that we'd be even more ahead now. But the one thing that's important to really understand here, okay, just as what happened to Charlie Kirk immediately, Netanyahu was acting like he was a friend, when we know that's a lie, and we know that there's no other person more than Netanyahu and more than Shapiro and more than all these Jews like Hammer, they knew that Charlie Kirk was going against Israel. They knew it, but they acted like he was the best friend of Israel. It was all a big lie. That's a cover-up because they wanted to lessen suspicion of them. Now, listen to this. What happened in the Kennedy assassination? So Kennedy had this big, man, just big fight out with David Ben-Gurion. The guy that did the original letters of the book is a man named Sandler, maybe Jewish himself. I don't know if he's a Jew. It doesn't matter whether he's Jew or Gentile. But the point is, he published all these letters, and the toxic temperature of what these letters were. So Jews knew that if Ben-Gurion would have been the prime minister of Israel at the time when Kennedy was assassinated, and they realized, and there were a lot of people who knew about these letters, they would have published the letters of Kennedy threatening Israel and Israel, you know, doing this, right? So what did Ben-Gurion do?
Resigned. Now,
he resigned from office early, right after this. Because they knew that they had a plan to assassinate Kennedy and to see if he's not as the Israeli prime minister a month or two later, that's all just past history. It's less bringing on. If he had been prime minister, that immediately would people say with these letters, who's got the motive to kill Kennedy? Well, it's obvious who had the motive. It's Israel. So we did this. The same thing happened. Boy, history repeats itself with Jews all the time. They use the same dirty tactics, the same way they said that Iraq was near a nuclear bomb, and Iraq was whatever. Right.
Dave, before you get into Iraq, let's watch the rest of the video.
Okay, let's do it.
Okay.
Given them 6 months to stop lying about who his friends are. But Ben Shapiro attacking Megyn Kelly and pretending he is now Charlie's knight is where I draw the line. Megyn Kelly was a friend to Charlie, as was Tucker Carlson.
Charlie Kirk said I should grow my eyebrows out. This is absolutely ridiculous, Candace.
Candace, do you really expect them to change in 6 months? We don't have that kind of money.
Yeah, I would have dumped that shit immediately. She's being pretty. She's like showing the restraint of Iran right now.
This is, by the way, this is Meghan McCain's husband, Benjamin Douchematch, Douchey Babe. Mm-hmm. He says if Charlie Kirk remains the head of TPUSA, the right has an anti-Semite problem that will follow them in the coming elections. He tweeted that out on October 15, 2023. What? He also tweeted out, Kirk's TPUSA has made him a multimillionaire who owns 5 properties. He's set to lead a $108 million GOTV effort in Arizona, Georgia, and Wisconsin. And he's saying Israel had a stand down order and
which they 100% did have, and that's a matter of public record. You sack of shit.
They told me.
I got to get this. Think about this now. This is about 2 years before Charlie Kirk was assassinated, right? So even 2 years ago, they're telling you he's getting hundreds of millions of dollars in. This guy is an anti-Semite. So that itself proves incredible motive. You don't think the big billionaire Jews and those Jews in the Mossad that specialize in assassination and murder for a living, and it's so easy for an intelligence organization to get a patsy to do something and then to arrange this kind of thing. It's so easy. They did it with Oswald with the Kennedy assassination. That's it. But that's so powerful. And it just shows you, again, motive. They knew that if Charlie Kirk lived and continued to do what he was doing, that they would lose the conservatives, they lose any Christians left in Christian Zionism, Satanism, Christian Antichristism. They knew they'd lose that. And that would have destroyed Israel, because without the support of America and conservatives in America and Republicans in America, they could not keep the Israeli state going, period. How's that for an argument, Dave?
I like it. It's possible. Let's finish it up.
Okay. News.
So that's her husband just lying for Israel.
Still better than her father, who should rot in hell.
I like this one. It says, yeah, why the F would we care about evidence when TPUSA can just make stuff up? I'll tell you what my Charlie would have said if he were here. That's exactly what they're doing.
Leave my company to the wife.
Yeah. We know what Charlie really said.
Mickey West texted me that. They go, if anything should ever happen to me. Have you ever heard of anyone doing anything like that ever?
No.
You haven't. If anything should ever happen, like John Lennon didn't even do that with Yoko. And why should be killed by a crazy Yoko's the new John Lennon? He never did anything like that. That's crazy talk. They made it with an AI and no question.
Because
Charlie didn't say that.
Everybody knew
Meghan McCain.
Yoko was local.
Why are you painted in Maria Farmer's paintings?
Well, I bet I know why.
Oh. That's her.
Yeah.
That's who?
Yeah, I know why she is, because she's part of the thing. Just like her scumbag father, who when he died was given unto Hestia's bosom in the rotunda. You know that weird bizarro where George Washington is Zeus on a throne in heaven? You've seen that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that creepy pagan thing in this fake Christian country. She's part of that cult that her shitbag father's in, that carries in and bushes in. All of them. That's why we have Osiris's dick as the Washington Monument. There's a reason why.
Oh, brother.
Because that's what they do. Maria Farmer painted that, yeah.
And if you want to hear my jokes about this, and I've got them, come see me in San Antonio, Texas, Albuquerque, Houston, Dallas, Salt Lake City, Las Vegas, and then
Well, that's it, right?
Who's that a picture of, by the way, Dave?
That's Meghan McCain.
Oh, my God.
Now see, it says Meghan McCain. Why are you painted in Maria Farmer's painting? Psychopath much?
Yeah, well, that sounds well. You know, McCain is one of the most. We all knew that. Everybody, in fact, every decent Republican was understanding that McCain is, you know, an asset for the Jews. Totally, you know.
Who isn't? Who isn't? Besides Massey.
It's hard to say. That's really true.
Yeah.
You know, and the I mean, look at the head of the DOJ. She destroyed 3 million documents on the Epstein thing in a suit. This is in congressional test. 3 million documents. This is before the other ones, right? And those are the ones that probably God knows. Now, one person said something. This is late news or interesting news for our audience here on this Sunday night. But this is fascinating. Here, listen to this news, right? So this Jewish guy, an historian in Germany, which is really a courageous Jew. He's very much anti-Israel. He's very much anti-Jewish supremacism. His name is Chaim, and it's a funny name, Sebeth, I think it is. It's a complicated name, Sebeth Shabrino, something like that. Anyway, he did a big story. And by the way, it's hard to get Jews who absolutely will say something that have a little bit different narrative about the German National Socialists. He did. He was on the Katie Halper show, and they had these Jews against Zionism, and Jews, you know, on behalf of Palestinians meeting in thing. And he talked about it. He's an historian that actually worked out of Germany, right? But a Jewish historian. He looks like an old white grandfather type, you know, blue eyes and, you know, white beard and pale skin. Obviously, a lot of Gentile blood in them somewhere. I guess the Jews complain.
Well,
they got
what, about 30 Ashkenazis have about 30% European DNA.
And by the way, but that's because Ashkenazis are related to Europeans more than Sephardi is, just a little bit. It's not much difference. But the truth is that much difference in the fact that Jews have been inbreeding. We talked about this last week, right? The point is these genes that Jews have of this intermixture to a degree, and then the intense inbreeding that they've had made Jews very, very distinct from the Palestinians. And now if you look at the Jewish genome from the time around Christ and before Christ, right, you had much more diversity in the genome than you have today among the Jews. And you had more diversity in Erfurt Cemetery, which where Sephardi Jews were living in northern Germany, in this Jewish cemetery. It's called Erfurt. This is a big New York Times article. So those Jews buried in that cemetery, right, were much more diverse in terms of their genealogy than the Jews of the present time, right? So what happened is Jews became a more distinct race, inbreeding intensively, you know, supporting. It was a eugenic program. Right. So any Jew, for instance, think about this. The Jews are a very close-knit community. Any Jew that thought those goy girls were really gorgeous and they were so beautiful and they sang so beautifully and they were such magnificent people and they were so much more honest than my dog sneezing. And they're so much more honest than these Japs, right? Jewish American princesses. It's much more decent. So we're attracted to that. And they went to the museums and they loved the graven art of the Gentiles, right? The art and the literature and the music and the architecture and the poetry and all these magnificent things. Oh man, just what these Europeans did. Any Jew that found that irresistible because it answered to his spiritual soul, answered to his values, right? So if he outmarried, right, or if he rejected Judaism because of this hatred that percolated in Judaism all the time, any Jew that did that, he was expelled from the Jewish community. And what was that expulsion from the Jewish community? It was expulsion from the Jewish gene pool. So the Jews that were left, and they just think of it as a concentration. It's like, for instance, let's say you have a group of Malteses and you have a pair of Malteses that have all white hair, except maybe they got black ears or something, right? And so if you wanted to get all the Malteses to have black ears, or at least a group of Malteses to do that, what would you do? When you had a litter and you had the two Malteses mixed with black ears, so some of them came out with white ears, you'd expel that. You wouldn't be breeding with that. You'd only breed with the black-eared ones, right? So Judaism, you got to look at this like this. For a period of time, 2,000 years since the fall of the temple from 2070, and even before then, even in Jesus' time, they were already practicing a great deal of killing of Jews, any Jew that would dare to intermix with a Gentile. Phineas is the most famous story in the Old Testament, where a Jewish guy was going to marry a Gentile woman, a very attractive Midianite girl. And he could have still taught him, you know, Judaism, just like Muslims teach their kids Muslims and Christians teach their children Christianity, right? Even if they're not Christian or even if they're a different religious bent of Christianity. So Jews, they killed 24,000 Jews. 24,000 Jews because they dared to fall in love with a Midianite girl. Now, a Midianite was this close to a Jew in terms of its genetics. It was closer than you, like I said earlier, of an Angle. You've heard of Anglo-Saxons before, which is most Americans. Anglo-Saxons as Angles and Saxons. And this was common. This was the foundation of America, right? And the foundation of much of the British Empire. And
which is what they hated and had to destroy.
Right. So the interesting thing is, so what Judaism actually was a eugenics program. It was a master race ideology. So here's
it still is.
Well, here's some things. Yes, it still is. Absolutely is. And whether or not they believe in Judaism is not important. Judaism is what you call the phenotype in an animal kingdom. That's the environment around the animals. The genotype, of course, is the genetic aspect. It takes the phenotype and the genotype to make the animal behave the way an animal does in nature, like the breed of life in nature, whether you're talking about a toucan or an orangutan or a chimp or whatever, right? So what they were doing is they were promoting. Now, who was the person who had the most children in the Jewish community? It was the rabbi. And what was the rabbi? He's the guy that sat on his ass and studied the Talmud all day long. He didn't have to fight in wars. He got the first choice of the Jewish women, the smartest Jewish women, the richest Jewish women, right? And he had the biggest family. He was the one that everybody bent over to have the children. And what was his devotion? His devotion was Jewish supremacy. His devotion was the Jewish holy seed and believing in that. So the people with the most radical Jewish views and hatred of humanity, by the way, were the ones that reproduced the most. They inbred more than any other people have done. That's why it's 100 times more common for a Jew to be a schizophrenic than a non-Jew to be a schizophrenic. Because of the inbreeding, they share these recessive genes that cause someone to be schizophrenic. Now, one more thing, and this is such an important point, and you can't understand Jews unless you make sure you understand this point. Most of you, I think, understand modern heredity and modern studies have shown clearly, without any question, we are not tabula rasa when we're born. We inherit certain aspects of our gene, which actually affect our character. That's why people not only agree with their biological parents in terms of their political views or their, like, if the parents are really soft-spoken, right, and are not aggressive and not selfish and not whatever, it's often likely for the kids. And people can say, yes, of course, they're being raised that way because that's the way the parents are also raising them, right? So is it the genes or is it the parents' way they're raising? But now we know, because we've done massive studies of what's called identical twins. Identical twins share all their genes. The identical twin, as compared to a paternal twin, shares every one of their genes, right? So the first thing we can look at is the paternal twin that's in the family, same family, and you look at an identical twin within that family. And when we study sociologically, the identical twin, they're born at the same time, right? They have the same parents. They're going to the same schools, right? So guess what? The identical twin is twice as likely to have similar sociological attitudes toward being selfish or delayed gratification or aggressive qualities than the fraternal twin is that have identical those traits with another Jew. We've even seen those identical twins who are Jews or Gentiles, anybody, who's separated from birth. So they're raised by entirely different families, sometimes in different parts of the world. They've even had identical twins raised in Japan or Asia, right? Rather than America. And so they have one of the identical twins is raised in, identical twin now, is raised by parents in Japan. Another identical twin is raised by parents in America, Europeans in America, right? So when they before they're eight, when they find out who they are, and they had to find out through lots of investigation, when they find out who they are, they don't allow them to talk together first. They don't allow any socialization between them and the families. They go give sociological questions to the identical twin who is in this other country and the identical twin who is back home, right? And so they look at the sociological questions, and they do sociological questions to study things like ethnocentrism. Is the identical twin, is the one that's raised by, is the identical twin more likely to be ethnocentric? You know, are there are in a family, for instance, it's not ethnocentric or is ethnocentric? Are they more likely to be an ethnocentric person, right? Then what's going on with the other identical twin? So are they going to be closer to their birth parents with ethnocentrism? Or are they going to be more closer with their genetic parents? And guess what they find? That the genetic aspect, like ethnocentrism, for example, that's what we call racism, typical attitudes of really bias against other peoples, right? We find it's, you know, 0.4 on the scale, which is very, very powerful genetic factor. That's how, that means that 0.4 out of one, you know, are going to be more likely to be ethnocentric rather than the person of the physical family that they raised them, right? Then their nature verdict is going to likely be ethnocentric. They also can show you aggression. They can show you delayed gratification. They can show you all sorts of things. They had the identical twins separated from birth. And so they end up both buying a house with a big tree in the back and building a bench around the tree. Or they do these sociological things, you know, like, for instance, a lot of people flush the toilet before they use it, right? Now, that's not common to everybody, but a lot of people don't want that water to splash up on them or something, or somebody else use the toilet before them or whatever. And some people don't, right? So they found the identical twins were like 0.5 or 0.6 more likely to flush the toilet first before they go to the bathroom, then the people that raised them would, or that family would. Isn't that fascinating? So it just shows you things we kind of know, that certain families have certain traits they share. And it doesn't mean they always have to be identical with children and fathers and mothers. With fathers and mothers, you have a whole bunch of different genes, I should say. And you have paternal twins, which share half their genes, right? Like a brother and sister. And then you have, of course, identical twins. So we know that there's a genetic aspect to that. Now, that does not mean we should discriminate to try to hurt somebody because their brother, their identical twin, their brother's a murderer, so they might be a murderer. And maybe there's a little more chance of it, but we give people the shot. We give people the chance of being a decent person, right? It doesn't mean we should punish anybody. But what it means is these are realities. So what Jews did was really have a two-pronged genetic eugenic program based on genealogy, right? The first part of it was they separate themselves from Gentiles, and they utter all these curses toward Gentiles. The Gentiles are evil. They're vile. You should hate Gentiles. You don't marry Gentiles. You don't associate with Gentiles. You don't drink from the same wine bottle as a Gentile, even if it's poured into your glass, right? You don't work with a Gentile. You don't practice, you know, you don't go to work for a firm that doesn't have the Sabbath, because you can't do any work on the Sabbath. You separate. So, and you must have circumcision. And Gentiles during those times, and up until recently, when America got so Jewified that we had circumcision. I hate to tell people this, but most of us in America are circumcised. I'm not going to discuss my foreskin, but I'm just saying that most Americans are circumcised. It's not that way in Britain. It's not that way in France. It's not that way in Russia. It's not that way in Greece. It's not that way in Rome. It's not like that any place, except maybe in some Muslim communities where they have it. And even then, the Muslims don't demand circumcision, right? Because circumcision is a way to protect the genes and a way to prevent. Who would want to get converted to Judaism if you're going to have some filthy rabbi, right, with dull knives and maybe infected with every sort of disease you could possibly imagine and no anesthesia, cut off half of your reproductive organ, right? I mean, nobody, somebody's got to be out of their right mind. That could be a big barrier for having some Gentiles saying, look, I'm an important person. I like you Jews, and you guys are rich. I'd like to become a Jew. Sure, Joe. Yeah, you're a Christian. You want to become a Jew? That's great. We'd love to have you. Of course, there's one little catch. You've got to cut off half of your penis by a rabbi who then has to suck the blood out of it for you by wrapping his mouth around your organ. Now, if that's if you don't mind any of that, then you're welcome to join us. I don't know. That might put a damper on conversion. And why do they do that? Because, again, Judaism is all about preserving the, quote, the holy seed. And we know the whole the seed of Jews is very holy, right? Like Epstein and the Epstein class, right? We know how holy Epstein was. We know that he's got the holy seed of pedophilia, right? And pedophilia is something that, by the way, is consecrated and accepted by Judaism. I swear. They talk about manservants, both, you know, addressing boys. I'm not making this up, folks. I'm making this up. You know, this is public statement. You can hear it right here in this tape. If I'm making this up, that Maimonides and other Jewish scholars in the Talmud said that it's okay for Jews, right, to rape Gentile boys or girls at any age. And it's okay for, you know, it's not a death penalty. And it's okay for Jews to rape children. Children, even under the age of 3, but that's a special rule for under the age of 3. They say it's nothing, like you put your finger in the eye, but virginity comes back to you for a girl, right? But they also did this for boys under the age of like 9, 10 years old. And their argument is that children don't have any souls, and because children aren't people, because they don't have cognition. Now, the Talmud really says this. It really does say this. This is not some sort of anti-Semitic.
Dave, we got a call.
Sure, let's go.
All right, go ahead, caller. What's your name, and what do you want to ask?
You can just call me Dozer.
All right.
Yes, sir.
What's up, guys?
Hope you're enjoying the show. It's been David, kind of a big freak here.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting topic, circumcision. I learned about that a couple of years ago, and the story behind why they take the whole thing off is pretty funny. I was actually just talking about that in the chat. The Greeks were making fun of them because their dicks look weird. So they're like, and Jews were reversing it. So they had to prevent their people from reversing the surgery. And they just decided they just have to rip the whole thing off. Because originally it was just a slit. But yeah, it's I don't know. I kind of gross, you know.
I'd like to make a good comment on here too. It's a very important comment, I think, that people will understand. All right. So there's so many myths about Judaism and Christianity, okay? And I'll often give you a quote from the Bible where Jesus said that he comes not to, you know, to adulterate the law, but to fulfill the law. But what did Jesus Christ mean by that? When he definitely took on most, as well as the Christians, most of the most sacred Jewish laws, right? For instance, one of the most sacred Jewish laws was...
Hey, Dave, can we get to his question first?
Well, I do, but I just want to get to... We got in a little subject.
Because we're running out of time. We're running out of time.
I wanted to get... This is an interesting point. I think you'll...
I know, but it's not his question.
We got another... I'm going to answer his question.
Can we get to his question? Well, but he didn't ask it.
Good. I'm late. Let me do this.
He didn't ask his question yet.
This is a very important
addition. I didn't even ask a question.
All right.
He was about to.
I want him to ask a question, but I want to mention this. He mentioned circumcision, and he talked about that and added to it. And I wanted to add another comment about circumcision. Very important, right? Because it illustrates a point of lies that they tell Christians all the time. They'll say to you that Jesus Christ said, I came to fulfill the law. I'm not against the law. But actually, Jesus Christ went against the most important laws of Judaism. For instance, he said, you don't need circumcision. You don't want circumcision. Be circumcised.
Well, it's all about the circumcision of the heart anyway.
Exactly. Exactly. So that's a good example. He also said, right, that one of the important laws and circumcision was a must in Judaism. The other thing was another good example is the Sabbath. You cannot even pick up twigs in the Sabbath. Even your kids are freezing. You can't pick up a few twigs to heat them up to keep your kids from freezing and getting sick. Right. Jesus broke the Sabbath directly along with his disciples. They went and picked up food, and this is all in the New Testament, clearly, right? So he broke.
It's It's the idea that the Jewish laws are just about control. Exactly. It's all, yeah.
So the
trying
point,
to get the
point
population to do
Jesus
what they
did
want.
Change,
but
he did come to change the law. He did come to change the law that the Jews had to be worshipped now, and the Jews had a right to rule over the whole world, and Gentiles would be their slaves. And some of that stuff is in the Old Testament, like the okaying of slavery of Gentiles, but not of fellow Jews. That's just the point I wanted to make. What
okay.
do you think
well,
of that point?
If I can just ask something a little off topic.
Sure.
Sorry, there's a phone ringing in the background.
All right. Go ahead.
Hello? I'm part of the new generation of white nationalists, and I'm under 30. I've been around for about 10 years or so, and you've got a lot more experience under your belt than I do. And I see a generational gap that I don't know necessarily how to bridge. We're enjoying streams. We're shitposting on Twitter. We're doing our own thing, activism, whatever you want to call it.
Sure.
But I think that there's kind of a disconnect between the way that the older guys operate and the way that the younger guys want to operate, because we see a lot of people. It feels like a lot of you guys are concerned about things that we have absolutely no control over. And personally, I know a lot of guys that think that is wasted effort to give a shit about what's happening in the Middle East, to care about global events as they unfold. You can kind of understand that it's important, because if the Jews are distracted, then that kind of gives us an opportunity. One of the guys in the chat was saying, strike while the iron's hot. And I think that's the case right now, because they're weak. But I think there's just generally a lack of communication between the older guys and the younger guys. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of created this almost animosity between mm-hmm. the two. Mm-hmm. And I'm just curious, how do you think that we could end up trying to move past that? Or if there's any way that our complaints, our genuine complaints about strategy, content, focus, that sort of deal, can get heard by you, and then maybe, I don't know how that would end up trickling down in the end, but.
Exactly.
Can I get what I'm trying to put down here?
I think I am, and I took some notes. This is going to take a little bit more time, but this is one of those important questions. This is an existential question. What is our strategy to reach and span these differences between, for instance, the boomers and the young? We need all of them. In fact, we should be enlisting the boomers, because boomers also, usually you have a lot more wealth in your life. Not all boomers have wealth.
Yeah, and one of the things, sorry to cut you off, but one of the things that we get frustrated about is when people try and say grift off of us, because we don't have much and we're starting families with nothing. We're trying to raise white kids with very little resources, and it feels like almost a lot of the content is focused on guys who have a lot of disposable income.
What I try to do is this. Yeah, there has to be some content with that, but it has to be also directed to them. Now, what you say is absolutely correct. And let me tell you something. It's just as important as anything you do for telling the truth, and you should always, and you're always in a position to wake up our fellow people and our people around America, and for that matter, around the world, because we all come in contact with different people with links around the world. Everything's interconnected today. So we should definitely be, you know, when we get some drugs in the drugstore, if it's not too busy in there, you strike up a conversation with the lady that's filling the prescriptions or something. Make a comment about current news. She's much available. Say a few words that she's going to remember about these issues. So we always should be telling the truth. But fundamentally, there's nothing more important you can do. And this is one thing that I have to say in very much opposition to some of this insult type ideology. You know, people, there's nothing more important that a young person can do, especially before the time of fertility for men and women expires, especially for women, because they have a closer clock for fertility than men do. But men have a clock too running. The most important thing you can do, in addition to teaching your friends and multiplying your opinions by sharing your message to your friends and family and associates, but you need to have children. And the truth is, in life, we know that men who have a good partner in life, a good woman, a mother for their children, especially if you're going to have children, you got to raise those kids. If you don't raise the kids and you have an input on them, God knows what's going to happen to them. Who knows what's going to, if the wives often, a wife or a woman, a wife will fall under, if she falls in love with a man, women tend to gravitate to the husband's position because men are a little more dominant. So it's important for people to have marriages and to have strong marriages and children. And the more children, the better. So that's vital. It's not, to be an incel is not what you want to do in your life. Even though,
oh God, no.
You know, that's not what you want to do. You want to have a very powerful family and beautiful children. It also gives you purpose in life and a meaning in life and a direction in life. If you're just footloose and fancy free and you're just used to solving your own selfish desires, I want to go skiing and whatever in the mountains this winter. And I know if I have a kids and family, I probably can't afford it or I won't be able to do it. You know, it's like maybe you can get a job where you can do that too. You know, maybe you can set up something in your life or you can get the kind of job you can do. I mean, you can worry about all those other things later, but you got to have children.
But yeah. And if I can just cut in a little bit, one of the things I learned when I had my first kid was that it wasn't as expensive as I got told it would be.
Exactly.
Because we breastfed, we did cloth diapers, we ended up doing everything ourselves, and it turned, and of course, baby turns out white as all can be, and healthy as you could ever hope to be, and we don't even take her into the doctor at all, because why bother? That was a tie-up that I personally fell for, because for years I'm like, oh, it's going to be expensive. I need savings. The only thing that was really expensive was the hospital stay,
to be honest. Right. But you know, when I had two daughters, and when I had my daughters and I saw how beautiful they were, both of them were just so incredibly beautiful. I tell you something that became much stronger was my Christian faith, because Christ always say that children are of the kingdom of God, and you see God in those innocent children that we have. And that was one difference between Christianity and Judaism. Judaism didn't respect children. The Epstein pedophilia and the pedophilia that are so common among these Jews are these local.
Oh, yeah, no, don't they say that you can like rape a kid if they're under like three or something? So long as like the hymen recovers.
They say you can marry. This is Miami. This is Rambam. I'm going to give you a specific thing here. This is in the Mishnah Torah. You can look it up. And the most famous sage, the most famous theologian of Judaism, was not even Moses. Moses was the old guy that supposedly wrote the Old Testament. And by the way, the New Testament literally says that, you know, Moses is replaced by Jesus. And don't let yourself be fooled to say that Moses was the essence of the law. The truth is Jesus is the essence of the law, not Moses. Isn't that interesting, right? And Jesus said, only one person has ever truly seen the face of God. This is what Jesus wrote in the New Testament. It's not what I'm saying. You know, it's what Jesus said. He said, only one person has ever seen the face of God. And he says, it's me. God's my father. I'm his son. And if you want to see God, to his apostles, he said, come look at my face. I'm his son. You're seeing God in my face. And he also said, nobody ever heard the voice of God, but from my father, except for me. Now that is words of Christ. That you can believe them or not. You can believe all the different things that were written in the Old Testament, or you can believe maybe there were angels speaking to some of these disciples, whatever. You believe whatever you want. But I know what Jesus said, and I'm interested in knowing what Jesus said and following what Jesus said. But Jesus also said that anyone who disabused, that hurt, or offended a child, it just did anything to horribly harm a child or make a child even stumble, deserved to have a millstone on their neck and go to the bottom of the sea. This is what Jesus said. Jews didn't say that. In the Torah Mishnah written by Rambam. That's the Jewish name for Moses Maimonides. And they often say from Moses, you know, Moses of the Pentateuch to Moses Maimonides or Moses Rambam. They say that this is their actual words. It's from Moses to Moses, right? That they consider him the greatest sage of the Jews. He wrote the Torah Mishnah. It's part of this part of the Talmud. And in there, he says very, very clearly, right, that children of the age, like little girls, these are Jewish kids too, and Gentiles can be raped anytime, no problem, you know. In fact, if you rape a Gentile kid or a Jewish kid, by the way, and you get in trouble because of it, it's not the predator. It's not the person that rapes this child that should be punished. You know who's supposed to be punished? The little girl. The little girl must be punished because she got a Jew in trouble. Now, this sounds totally
crazy. Classic Jewish inversion.
Talk about an inversion. That you begin to understand Epstein, right? You begin to understand the Epstein class. But anyway, it goes on, right? So it says that, and this is clearly written in Maimonides. He said a Jewish girl who is 3 years old today, so he's just turned 3 years old, right? That she can be raped and in coition can be betrothed and be made into marriage, consummated into marriage by just some Jewish man raping her. Or you can betroth a girl that's 3 years old in a day. So just turned three, it's basically two in the very first day of her three-year-old life, right? And you literally can marry her. And how is the marriage consummated? How is the marriage consecrated in the Jewish faith and in the honor and sacrament? It's consummated in intercourse. It's consummated in coitus. Now, when I say something like this, and this is what's going to be in some articles that I'm writing right now, hopefully a book eventually we'll put out. When I say something like this, it offends so much our own sensibilities that we think this can't be true, right? When I was reading these things in the Mishnah Torah, these are Jewish translations, Jewish authorities, Jewish writers, everything. And he was the most famous writer among the Jews. He's the most respected scribe. He's the most respected authority of Judaism. Is him, the Rambam. And this is what he says. That's the Jewish law, he says.
Dave, we got less than 5 minutes. So
okay, we're running out of time. But this is such an important point. Now, let's go back to the subject because we're almost out of time here. But that's an important subject in itself we talked about. So what is our strategy? And here's our strategy, in my opinion. I've been around for now 75 years. I'll be 76 in July. Hate to mention that. I won't be able to attract any more 35, 40-year-old girls anymore, I guess, once they find out I'm 76. But anyway, if that's old enough, though. I think that's legal.
Oh, man, you're kind of a celebrity. Who knows?
You never know. You know, it's amazing. I'll never be cease to be surprised at what girls may find as attractive. If they love your mind and they love your spirit and you're fairly healthy, hopefully strong. I don't know if I'm going to be strong. I'm going to get stronger then, hopefully, if I get rid of this cancer ridden. But I'm going to be strong and healthy. We'll see what happens. I'm not depending on that. And in a way, it's kind of nice to be, in some ways, it's good to be free of those desires in that time because even though I'm very tired with the cancer therapy, I'm very motivated, right? And I'm spending my time very single-mindedly on the tasks in front of me in these last days or months or years of my life. And I've got a lot of wonderful work to do. Now, what's the story? The first thing people have to understand when people talk about foreign things or foreign wars, okay? If you're concerned about the survival of European mankind, and we all certainly should be, as we're concerned about every people have a right to survive, then we must understand that the biggest mass murder of Europeans and destruction of European mankind and the Jewish takeover of mankind. What caused those things? What were the biggest single mass murders, genocides that caused us to lose control of our societies, our nations, our world? I'll tell you what they were. It was the Great Wars, first of all, in the 20th century.
Dave, we got 30 seconds.
Can I go? No, I can't.
I gotta go.
Well, if we can't, we won't.
Let's wrap it up.
His question was, what can we do to bridge that gap? The bridge the gap is we have to make people understand, including the young people, that we now have an interconnected world. One of the big mistakes the National Socialists made is that they thought they could have a national revolution to save Germany in the middle of the sewer that was rushing over them and the whole world against them. One of the mistakes Hitler made and the Germans made, and they made some mistakes, admittedly, is that they should have spent more money waking up the rest of the world, saving not just Germany, but all the different countries with really intensive propaganda, the same way Jews were influenced in the propaganda of other countries. And our people have got to understand this. To save the white race, we have to save, in effect, the world. Otherwise, we're a tiny minority. They're going to gang up the world against us. And we're not going to survive this thing unless we have certain allies and understand that either we save the whole world, so to speak, we stop Jewish control over the whole world, which they will use the rest of the world against us. So we have to really educate the whole world and bring them into our position to understand that the Jews are the greatest enemy of their people and their nations and their forefathers and their values and their traditions as they are to us. That is absolutely essential. And every time you convert another person to the threat of Judaism, to the threat of them against all humanity, they're also sharing. Look at all the people you work with that are working with non-whites and people from other countries and so forth. The more you convert people and the more you get other people around the world to understand the Jewish question, most of the world's ahead of us right now on the Jewish understanding, the more our own people are going to wake up. And that's what's helping us. And so it's hurting us in the sense that we're being replacing in our own countries. And that's also the product of the Jews. But we definitely have to make sure our people understand that we have to be for human rights for all humanity. And by standing up for our rights, but understanding that we have to be dedicated to the rights of every people in their own nations to preserve their heritage. That way we're not hypocrites and we should be allies with every other people who are suffering from the horrible genocides and murders and destructiveness and the porn and every other vile entity that Jews are bringing about in the world. When we do that, we have a much greater chance to save humanity. So that's true for old people. It's true for the old bubble bursters, you know, the old guys like me. It's also true for the young people out there, because if they send you to war, if you go to war in Iraq and you get your nuts blown off or you get killed, you're not going to be making any babies. You got to stay out of those wars. You got to get America out of those wars.
All right. All right, buddy. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, please call again.
Thank you, Dave.
Thank you, buddy.
Frog, stay high.
Yep. Thank you. Bye-bye. It's a great call. Appreciate it. That's a show we could spend an hour on, those kind of questions.
There you go, buddy. All right, Dave, we're done. And
I'm out of breath.
Yeah, well, that's good. You know, you barely took a breath. So that's good. All right, my friend.
I think it's like it rivals the best of our shows.
Who was that who called during the show?
I don't know.
Somebody called during the show.
Oh, that was a gentleman who was calling me from.
That wasn't Slattery, right?
No, it wasn't Slattery.
Oh, he learned his lesson.
No, it wasn't Slattery.
All right.
But it's important for me to call. I don't get that many calls because I'm very judicious on my number. But when I get a call, sometimes it's so important for you to answer those calls because
right.
They may be, because sometimes it's like anything else in life. You got to strike while the iron's hot.
And if somebody I learned that lesson hard
to help you. And
in the 80s,
I'm totally forgiving of Dr. Slattery when I'm doing my show and he takes a call and he goes and I continue the show. I have no
problem. Yeah, but I'm not. Myself, but right? I'm not. I'm not.
But I'm not, because I mean, you got to, he does.
I'm not forgiving of Slattery.
He
does
this. Look, he spends 75% of his time, or I'd say 50% of his time, trying to save our people and save this world, right? And from the Jews. And anytime that he needs to get a contact with one of his customers, one of his people that he works with, his publishing business and other things he does. I want to say exactly what he does. But every time that he does that.
Holy shit.
That's okay.
All right. Go ahead, buddy. All right. We're out of here.
That's one of my old supporters.
Go ahead. Grab the call. We're out of here. Go ahead.
It was one of the followers of Rockwell. Right,
well, go ahead and grab the damn call.
Hey, George. I'm on the show. Right. On my show.
We're out of here, guys. Jimmy, thanks for your donation at $10.
On Sunday night.
Thank you all. Great to see you all. and we'll see you this week.
Okay, thanks, man.
All right, Dave.
Look forward to seeing you later in the week.
Yes, sir.